Stick of the Dump, Chapter 2, Part 2. By the time Barney had got his load to the edge of the pit, he was quite tired, but there was still the problem of getting them to the bottom. He sat on the camel's neck tree trunk. The string was still there. It was a thick brown sort, and he thought it would be strong enough for a few jam jars. He called to Stig, and after some time, Stig came out, backwards, like a badger with its bedding, dragging a load of chalk. "I've got some things for you, Stig," Barney called. He pulled up the string and took the end of the pile of jam jars. About 8 of them were packed in a cardboard box. It would take too long to pass them down one by one, so he tied the string around the box, took it carefully along the tree trunk, and started to lower it. This wasn't nearly as easy as the carrots. The box swung wildly. The string round it started slipping. The part he was holding tried to run through his fingers and burnt his hands. He took a turn round the stump of a branch and let it run out round that, hardly daring to look down and see what was happening. He hoped Stig wouldn't get a jam jar on his head. The box was hanging by one corner when it reached the ground, but instead of untying it, Stig disappeared into his den. "Hey, Stig, undo it," Barney called. "There's some more to come." Stig came out again, holding what was left of a large, broad-brimmed lady's straw hat with ribbons to tie it under his chin. He untied the string from the box and tied it to the ribbons. It made quite a useful-looking cargo sling. "Jolly good idea, Stig," Barney shouted. "Stig's got brains," he thought. After that, it was quite easy. He hauled up the hat, filled it with jam jars, lowered it down with the string running round the stump of the branch, and waited for Stig to unload, hauled it up again, and so on. When he had finished the jam jars, he started on the tins, which were much lighter. When he had lowered all the tins, he looked at the truck. How strong is string, he wondered. Could he send the truck down the same way? If he didn't, he would have to trundle it all the way round the top and along the bottom of the pit. He wound the string a few times round the branch stump, leaving enough loose to reach the truck on the cliff top, humped himself along the tree trunk, tied the string to a wheel of the truck, and moved back along the trunk, and then pulled the truck towards him by the string. The truck lurched over the edge of the cliff, swung wildly outwards on the string, which ran out so fast that he couldn't stop it, until a tangle in the string made it stop with a jerk. The string broke and the truck was falling through the air. Barney held on for dear life to the tree, with his face against the mossy bark, and shut his eyes. He felt weak and dizzy. At last he allowed himself to look down. He couldn't see the truck at first. Then he saw that it had swung out to land on the branches of an elder tree that was hanging there quite happily. "I've sent the truck down," he called to Stig. "It may come in useful." He was still feeling what his grandmother used to call hot and cold all over, but he carefully inched himself off the tree and onto the firm ground and set off around and down to the pit. Pity he couldn't let himself down on a rope, but no, he thought, he wouldn't try that just yet. His idea of sending the things down on a string had been a good one, though he thought to himself as he walked through the corpse, another day he'd have to find some more tins and jam jars to send down. He hoped Stig liked them. They would come in useful for, well, things, like they're always come in useful if you kept them long enough. By the time he got to the den, Stig had untangled the truck from the tree and was squatting, looking at it, and at the tins and at the jam jars. And then Barney wondered what they were going to do with them. "These are jam jars, Stig," he explained. "Jam and marmalade come in them, and you can use them for making stuff in them, rice and coffee and things like that." But did Stig want to keep rice and coffee in his den? "And these are tins. They're empty, of course, but you get all sorts of things in tins. Peaches, baked beans. You have to open them with an opener like this." He took out of his pocket a tin opener, which he usually carried about with him. It was the sort with a butterfly handle, which you had to turn. Just to show, he fitted it onto the bottom of one of the empty tins and twisted the handle. The opener crept round the edge of the tin, and the blade ploughed into the metal of the bottom, and soon the shiny round disc of metal came loose. Stig was fascinated. He looked at the flat round piece of tin, which had been the bottom. He looked at the empty tube, which was all that was left of the rest of it, and he took the tin opener from Barney and turned the handle. But he couldn't make it out. "It's quite easy, Stig, look," said Barney. Take another tin, fitted the opener on the bottom, and showed him how to work it. There was another round plate and another tin tube. Then Stig had to have a go, and they started on a third. One of the tins had been rather flattened, but it gave Barney an idea for how it might be used. He took it, left Stig with the others, and towed the truck into the garden and along to the place where Stig had been digging at the chalk. There was quite a lot of loose rubble lying about there, and Barney set to work to shovel it into the truck with the flattened tin. It was certainly better than using his hands, though it wasn't quite the right sort of shovel shape yet. He hammered at it with an unbroken flint stone and made it into quite a handy scoop, like the sort the village grocer used for shovelling sugar into little paper bags. He toiled away until the truck was heaped full. It held much more chalk than the tin bath, and because of its wheels, he could pull it away quite easily. "Look, Stig," he said, as he went past where Stig was sitting. "Look at all the chalk I've loaded." But Stig seemed too busy to notice. Barney wheeled the truck along to the place where they were now dumping the chalk and tipped out the load. Then he ran back to the den with the truck bouncing along empty behind him. And when he got back, Stig was sitting there surrounded by round plates of tin and empty tubes, and just in the act of taking the bottom out of the last tin. "Stig, what are you doing?" exclaimed Barney. "You've spoiled all the tins now. You can't keep things in tins with no bottoms." He was really quite annoyed. What was the use of a lot of tin tubes with no ends? Stig sat there playing with them. He seemed to have the idea of fitting one inside the other, but that wouldn't work because they were all exactly the same size. However, one of them had got a bit pinched, did fit into another, which seemed to please him a lot. Barney thought it was a bit of a childish of Stig to sit there playing like a baby with plastic bricks when there was all that work to be done. But Stig went on seriously worrying over the problem of fitting them together. He found that by pinching together the end of the tin, he could make it fit into the next one. And soon he had four or five fitted together like a length of stovepipe. "Stovepipe!" Barney knew there was something Stig needed badly. "You're clever, Stig," he said. "You've made a chimney." Stig looked blank. He didn't know he needed a chimney. He didn't know what a chimney was. Certainly he'd never made one. But it hadn't been for Barney, he wouldn't have known. Working together, they fitted all the tins, one into the other, until they had a pipe that was taller than either of them. With Barney directing, they carried it into the smoking den, where it was too long to stand upright. "Now all we've got to do is poke it through the roof," said Barney. Stig looked doubtfully at him, but together they managed quite easily to push it through a crack between the piece of linoleum and a sheet of corrugated iron. But now what? They couldn't just leave it hanging above the fire. "I know," exclaimed Barney, "the bath." He left Stig patiently holding the chimney and went and fetched the bath. What luck! It had a rusty hole in the bottom, which only needed a little work with the boot scraper to make it big enough to fit the chimney through. Stig was dimly beginning to see what Barney was trying to do, and together they built up a fireplace of chalk blocks and big flints, rested the bath upside down on top, and there was a mantelpiece and chimney with the flue leading from the hole in the upturned bath through the roof and into the open air. Barney lit the fire, which Stig had laid as they built the fireplace, and threw some additional scraps of paper and twigs onto it. Once the smoke had leaned its way, went roaring up the pipe. They rushed outside, and there it was, coming out of what looked like a proper chimney pot sticking through the roof. Stig watched fascinated. "There you are, Stig," said Barney. "Now you've got a proper fireplace. People can come and visit you without getting their eyes full of smoke." Actually, Stig didn't seem to care very much about having the place full of smoke, but he was as pleased with his fireplace as if it had been a new toy, and kept on putting twigs and leaves on the fire so that he could go out and see the smoke coming out the other end. Barney was so proud of his invention that he looked round for something else to invent. He saw the stack of jam jars. What had he brought for this? It would be too dull just to use them to keep food in. Stig's den wasn't that sort of place. He had to think of a new way of using jam jars. What had he thought Stig's house needed most? A chimney? He's got that now. A chimney, and yes, a window. A window. Well, windows were made of glass, and so were jam jars. Yes, but the shape. Doors were made of wood, and so were clothes pegs. Ships were made of steel, and so were tin openers. But you can't make a ship out of tin openers, or a door out of clothes pegs. The shape's wrong. You couldn't hang a glass flat, could you? He picked up the boot scraper. No, of course not. Stig had stacked the jars on top of each other, lying on their sides. They made a sort of wall of glass like that, but they rolled about. Of course, there were gaps between the jars. Barney looked at one side of the den, the darkest side, which really needed windows. He built the wooden boxes from the dump bottoms outwards, open tops inwards. He took the digging tool and knocked the bottom out of one. There was now an open square where the daylight came in, but so did the wind, and Stig didn't seem at all pleased at sitting in a draught. Stig's like to be snug, thought Barney. He carried the jars in and stacked them in the frame of the box. They fitted quite well. The light came in, but the draught came in too. Stig got up. To where they had latterly been the landslide, and quite a large chunk of cliff top had come down in one piece. Between the topsoil and the chalk there was a layer of red clay, good damp squidgy stuff you could make model animals out of. Stig began to dig out lumps of clay with his fingers, and Barney found another good clay mine and did the same. They got as much as they could carry and took it back to the den, and from the outside Stig set to work to fill the gaps in between the jam jars. They had to make two more journeys before all the jars were firmly bedded in clay, and then Barney carefully wiped the smears off the bottoms of the jars with a rag. Then they stood and admired their window. They even made faces at each other, one standing inside and the other outside, because you could almost see through it. It certainly let the light in, even though it was late in the afternoon and there was not much light to let in. "Well, well," said Barney, "that's that." It was a thing he had often heard his grandfather say when he'd finished a job. He was tired after all the inventing he had done. He went to sit down, and then he saw all the round plates of tin that Stig had cut out lying around him. He gathered them up. He went back to the window and found that the discs fitted exactly over the ends of the jars if he pressed them into the soft clay. There was just enough to go around. "There you are, Stig," he said. "Like on a ship, to shut the portholes, if you don't want people to look in, or to shut the dark out." There was a feeling in the evening air that darkness was coming, and that it would be snug to sit by the new fireplace and watch the fire going up the chimney. But Barney suddenly remembered something and stood up with his mouth open. "Stig," he said, "I've got to go home. All the way home, I mean. I probably won't be staying with Granny till Christmas." Stig looked at him. "Stig," said Barney, "when I come back again, you will still be here, won't you?" Stig didn't answer, but he went to a little niche in the chalk wall, poked about among some things there, and brought back something which he gave to Barney. He looked at it. It was a little chipped flint, perfectly shaped like a flat Christmas tree, and very sharp. "An arrowhead?" Barney gasped. "For me?" "Oh, thank you, Stig. I really must go now. I'll see you at Christmas time. You'll be here at Christmas, won't you, Stig? Goodbye." And he ran off. As he made his way along the bottom of the pit, he felt he knew the way there better than anywhere else in the world, and he felt that Stig's house was as much his home as anywhere else. After all, it was like drawing pictures. Once you've put a chimney and a window on a house, you've really made a house.